Hello everyone, and welcome to CrownSearch, clinical research appraisal and methodology for surgical trainees, where we pick a paper fresh from the press on a hot general surgical topic. We review it for you, we present it for you, we critique its methodology for you, and provide top-of-the-field expert opinion and teaching on research appraisal and methodology. My name is Gio Perrin, and together with Professor Sababala Subramanian and Maria Digby, we bring you CrownSearch from the wonderful region of the Yorkshire and the Humber. Welcome back, everyone. Tonight we're going to have a look at a subgroup analysis of the Apollo study, an international cohort study on emergency management of colorectal cancer. This will be followed by a teaching session on Kendall's tau, another type of correlation that we will explore in some more details. I'll leave you to it.
So hi everyone, my name is Pratik and I'm with Sharanya and we are registrars in Huddersfield Hospital. And today we are going to present this paper which has come out in Disease Colon and Rectum. It's called The Global Use and Outcomes of Endoscopic Stenting in Acute Malignant Left-Sided Colonic Obstruction, a Secondary Analysis of Apollo, an International Prospective Cohort Study. Has been written up by the Eurosurge Collaborative and the Starsurge Collaborative. So I'll hand over to Sharanya, who will talk through the background and the methods, and then I'll talk about the results, and then she will wrap up with the conclusions. So Sharanya, please.
Thank you, Pratik. Good evening to you all. Thank you for your time and the opportunity. So I'll start with the background. So this paper basically assesses that up to one third of colorectal cancers present as an emergency, and they often come in with obstruction. And this explores whether the emergency states that emergency surgery carries high morbidity and mortality. And endoscopic self-expanding metal stents may provide decompression and the bridge to surgery or palliation. However, there is a global real world data on the use and outcomes are a bit lacking in this paper. So the population included all adults above the age of 18 with acute malignant left-sided colonic obstruction. The intervention proposed is surgical intervention versus endoscopic stenting, which is self-expanding metal stent. The conclusion outcomes were surgical decompression or non-operative management was also the comparison. And my outcome measured were 90-day mortality, complications, length of stay, readmission, days alive and out of hospital in 90 days. Methods, this is a prospective international multicenter cohort study. It's a secondary analysis of the Apollo study, which is the acute presentation of colorectal cancer, an international snapshot. It is an observational and it is a non-interventional study. It is it was done around 179 centers across 37 countries, which included both high income, middle and lower income countries according to WHO criteria. The enrollment period was between January to June 2023, and the follow-up was up to 90 days post-admission. It included 516 patients, and the median age was around 69, and 44% of the patients included were females. And this study, since it's a multi-center cohort study, they did use a lot of bias reduction method. And one of them, a few of them were propensity score matching. This used to minimize the selection bias between the stenting and surgery group. So this was used to create a comparable group based on the background. And since it is an observational study, it kind of matches the patients with a similar clinical profile. And then the other was multi-level, multi-variable regression adjustment. This is used to account the confounding variables and central level effects, the cluster of patients within the hospital. Basically means certain this model adjusted for certain factors like age, sex, ASA grade, comorbidity index, clinical frailty score, smoking status, and known presentation of cancer, or was the first presentation, cancer stage, treatment intent, and income level of the country. So it is statistically adjusted for many confounding factors, which can also account the differences between the hospital. So that was also used. Intention to treat analysis. So this is all these patients' primary analysis where stent placement failed were still retained in the stenting group. So In terms of, it basically says that all the patients were analyzed on the treatment they were initially assigned, regardless what happened, whether the treatment worked, failed, or complications, and they were had eventually had surgery, but they were still placed in the stenting group. Data validation, they were performed at each center. They were to verify the case assessment and cross-verify the accuracy of any a of 8 pre-specified variables. Outcome, so the primary outcome was a 90-day all-cause mortality. The secondary outcome was measured was 30-day mortality, length of hospital stay, days alive out of hospital in nine within 90 days, any unplanned readmissions, any stent-related complications which are immediate or delayed but within the 90 days, and post-operative grade Calvin gender complications, and elective surgery was offered at an 90-day follow-up.
Thanks, Sharon. So I'll talk a little bit about the results. So the total number of patients with acute left-sided coronary obstruction that were analyzed were 516, median age of 69. Females were 44% of this patient population, and the median clinical frailty score was 3. Of these patients, non-operative management was done in 9.1%, stent was offered in 10.5%, and operation was done in 80.4%. And these were the variety of operations that were offered. So the majority had a resection without anastomosis and proximal diversion, followed by resection with primary anastomosis without proximal diversion. Then the third group was proximally diverted without resection, followed by a resection with anastomosis and proximal diversion. And then a few patients underwent exploratory laparoscopy or laparotomy without any resection or diversion. So this is a chart showing the various groups. So no intervention, 47 patients versus endoscopic stenting in 54 and surgery offered in 415. And it also shows the 30-day outcomes, the 30-day mortality outcomes. So we can see it's quite significantly high in the no intervention group there than the endoscopic stenting or surgery groups. And again, for 90-day mortality outcomes, it's quite high. It's about 38.3% in comparison to 16.7% in stenting group and then 30% in surgery group as well. So they talk about, so they d divide the results into various sections, one of them being availability of stenting across their various centers which participated in this study. And they found that colonic stenting was only performed in 27% of the participating countries and 19% of the participating centers. The adjusted median rate of colonic stenting by center was 10.3%. Although there was a considerable variation between centers and which persisted even after adjusting for case mix. Stenting was predominantly only performed in high-income countries compared to low and middle-income countries. They talk about the comparison between non-operative management, endoscopic stenting, and surgery. So in the non-operative management group, previous patients with previously known cancers were more, so 63.8% of patients had previously known cancer in comparison to stenting group was 38.9% and surgery group 31.1%. Non-operatively managed group more frequently had advanced disease. Palliative intent was significantly more seen in non-operative management group. 83% versus the 63% in stenting group and 30% in the surgery group, and this was statistically significant. The patient background factors like age, sex, Charleston comorbidity index, and clinical frailty score were comparable across groups. They did survival analysis for all these three different groups and found that non-operative management had more rapid deterioration to mortality, as evidenced by these two lines of 30-day cumulative survival and 60-day cumulative survival, showing worse outcomes for non-operative management. Compared to non-operative management, both stenting and surgery offered reduced 90-day unplanned readmission and mortality rates. However, only surgery significantly reduced 30-day mortality and time to death within 90 days. Now they talk about stenting versus surgery, which is the most important thing that they focus on. Primary outcome was 90-day all-cause mortality, and in the stenting group, it was 4.8% versus 11.6% in the surgery group. Even after propensity score matching and multi-level multivariable adjustment, this did not reach a statistical significance. Secondary outcomes included 30-day mortality, length of stay at index admission, then days alive out of hospital at 90 days, unplanned readmission, elective surgery at 90 days follow-up. And of these outcomes, the length of stay at index admission and elective surgery and 90-day follow-up were favorable for stenting group. The others did not show any statistically significant difference between themselves. They also reported post-operative complications for the operation group, and major complications being greater than equal to 3 in the Clavien-Dindo grade of complications. So 20% of the patients who had operations had these major complications, and minor complications occurred in 30.5% of the patients, which were less than 3 in the Clavien-Dindo grade. With stent-related complications, immediate complications had happened in 9.3% of the stented patients, which included abandoned procedure, technical failure, and bowel perforation. And delayed complications happened in 7.4% of patients, which included stent migration, blockage, and perforation. So, Sharanya, what do you think about the limitations of this study?
So I think the study itself acknowledges certain limitations in the paper itself, and one of them being observational study, which automatically means it was not randomized. So I think there's an opportunity for selection bias, I feel. So sicker and frail patients could have been offered pushed towards a non-operative arm or a stenting group. And selection bias, even though they did try to use propensity scoring, multi-variable regressions, I think still there are certain confounders, like what type of tumor complexity or any patient wishes or hospital experience would still would have caused some amount of selection bias. There is some amount of missing data. Some of the crucial things were left out, so that is also causing data bias. And limited generalizability. So this one of the thing which this says is compared overall the high income, medium, and low income groups. But interestingly, 96% of the stenting came from high income countries, and it was very few from low and middle. So it really doesn't generalize all across the globe, as it mentions. And a couple of other things I did notice was the endoscopic stenting is compared to a variety of surgical procedures. It doesn't say whether it's a diverting stoma is being created or it is a primary resectional surgery we are offering. So it just gives us operative interventions as a group. Short follow-up, 90 days is very limited. So we don't know what happens beyond the 90 days, whether there is a stent migration, stent blocking issues, or any patient-related issues was not there. So the follow-up was pretty limited. And there was no prompt data. So there was no patient-reported outcome. So the few steps in the paper say that they're discussing for palliative stenting. So they did not measure any quality of life, pain, or any outcomes which came out of the stenting or surgery. It was one of my other things which I noticed. And other one was a small stent group. I mean, it was one of the comparison. The paper itself is called use of self-expanding metal stents, but the sample size of stenting patients around 54, if I right, which is relatively quite small with the larger number of patients in overall population. So I think if your size is small, it makes it very difficult for detect smaller or real life differences in that population. And it is not standardized, so the center and operator data is not equal. I understand it is very difficult, but who performed the stent is a question, whether it was a senior endoscopist who's probably done hundreds of stent, or it was a junior endoscopist who was starting, whether the center has a feasibility to offer a stent was also not quite clearly standardized. And as this paper reports, it's across the globe with different variable income countries. And they did not talk about the economic impact. So whether stenting is better, is cost effective or surgery is more cost effective, which could be one of the reasons where stent was omitted because of the cost. So I felt these were the couple of things which was noted as a limitation. Conclusion wise, we all feel that colonic stent is a reasonable alternative to decompressive surgery in acute malignant left colonic obstruction, and it can be used widely as a curative, as a bridge, and also as a palliative. There are a couple of good things. It is a multi-center, multinational study. It did say stenting is a good alternative. Coming back to the things which were not that good, it is an observational study. So it has got selection bias, and there was a lot of data bias in this as well. And there was short-term follow-up, and there was no prompt data, and the stent group was quite small. Coming to the clinical bits, there is a limited geographic generalizability. It did not standardize on the center or operator data, and cost effectiveness for this procedures were not clearly accounted for. So as overall, if this paper is going to impact my current our current practice, probably not. It does not prove any significant strong evidence for us to improve or change or remember this paper as a contributor to impact our practice, in my opinion. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the discussion about the paper. We had a few concerns related to the data that the authors presented, and particularly we focused on the outcomes reported for the non-operatively managed patient with large bowel obstruction. We felt that the survival rate for this subgroup was rather high. Given that they are expected to have effectively, the vast majority of them at least, a closed loop large bowel obstruction. And personally, I wouldn't expect them, if this was a true large bowel obstruction secondary to the cancer, to survive more than a few days. And looking at the survival curve that they presented, there appeared to be a relatively flat period after the onset of the study for patients that are managed non-operatively, suggesting a degree of immortal time bias, perhaps related to the fact that these patients do not have immediate mortality related to surgery or perforated stent. We also discussed the variability in surgical management for different type of cancers included in this study by location. So, for example, a sigmoid cancer versus a cancer at the splenic flexure, they would be managed surgically slightly differently. Perhaps one would be managed with an extended right hemicolectomy if the cancer were to be at the distal transverse or the splenic flexure, while a sigmoid colonic cancer would be managed with a sigmoid colectomy and an end colostomy, which makes this cohort of operated patients rather heterogeneous. I'll leave it to the teaching session. We'll relay some of our thoughts to the authors and see what they say.
Swap. There you go. Can I see it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I won't take too long. We're going to carry on our statistical tests guide. Today we're going to talk about another type of correlation that's called Kendall's tau. And I know what you're all thinking. Do we really need another type of correlation? Well, yeah, it does help to an extent, and we'll soon find out why. Usual disclaimers: I'm not a statistician or an expert in stat software, but I kind of like them and use both of them. These are the things that we talked about so far, and I will refer you back to the videos that we've recorded and published previously. We've now talked about quite a lot of things from students' D and ANOVA all the way to correlation. And today we're going to complete our series on different types of correlation techniques. There's more out there, but we're going to stop after Kendall, mostly because the other techniques are not really very commonly used. And of course, we look at how to run these tests on our favorite statistical software, which is Jamovi. We're going to carry on talking about continuous data, but we're going to make a little sort of intrusion there and mention a test that's particularly suitable for ordinal data. And if you're a bit confused about the concept of continuous data, ordinal data, et cetera, I'll remind you that we do have a fantastic video from Prof about different types of data. But basically, ordinal data is data that is continuous to an extent, but it does have a start and a finish. For example, grading system, ASA, or functional status and stuff like that. As I said, we're going to use our favorite stat software, which is Jamovi. If you're interested in knowing more about Jamovi, you can snap the QR code over there that sends you straight to their website. It's really easy to use, as you will see. Now, a quick recap. We talked about two different methods of assessing correlation between two variables, particularly for continuous data. We start with Carl Pearson here on the left. It's probably of the three statisticians you see in this picture, the one that started first. He's introduced the world to a number of concepts, including regression to the mean, et cetera, et cetera. What you see in the middle is Charles Spearman, who designed a slightly different technique to assess correlation, which is very good for data that's not normally distributed. And finally, Kendall. Kendall is probably the one that sort of came after them, in chronologically speaking, but he had an immense impact, not just in the statistical world, but also in other areas, such as he was the director for the World Fertility Survey, which ran up until the 80s, and had a significant impact in the way most of the family planning policies are now implemented in Europe, in states, and in various countries across the world. So his impact has been rather long-lasting, and he had a number of interests. Similarly to Fisher, he started his career looking at agricultural sciences, and he did quite a lot of research in how to apply statistics to improve, for example, crops production. Now, let's get into the actual topic. We talked about Pearson correlation. And we talked about how Pearson's correlation basically looks at a statistical relationship between two variables and how to calculate it. And we said that it works really well when the data is normally distributed. If the data is not normally distributed, we got Spearman's correlation. Spearman correlations, instead of using absolute values like Pearson's correlation does, he uses ranks. What are ranks? Well, a rank in a variable is the position that that particular value takes in a distribution when the values of the distribution are ordered from the smallest to the biggest. This is an example that I gave you last time. Suppose you've got four plants of cannabis and you want to determine whether there's a correlation between the height of the plant of cannabis and the number of grams that the plant produces. On the left, you've got a table that illustrates plants by their number and the centimeters of height and the grams produced. On the right, you have the same values but ranked. So as you can see, 25 centimeters ranks as the second smallest value in the distribution, and 3 ranks as the first or the smallest value in terms of grams produced. And by using ranks to run your calculations to determine correlation, you kind of take off the picture a lot of the effect of weird values, values that are too high or too low. You kind of transform a distribution into something a little bit more normal, and then you can assess the relationship between the two variables, even when the distribution is not normal, as I said. And what does ranking do? As we said last time, it reduces the effect of outliers and it makes it more reliable in nonlinear relationships. However, it does still have some limitations. And that's where Kendall's tau kind of comes in. One of the main limitations is that some relationships do exist that are not monotonic. What is a monotonic relationship? A monotonic relationship is a relationship between two variables where when one grows, the other one somehow grows. They might not grow in a linear way, but they do still grow consistently in one direction. But there are relationships, such as the one you can see in this fantastic chart, that actually are there, but they're not necessarily always growing. And you can think of a number of examples where these things happen in nature. For example, some enzymatic reactions, etc., etc. An enzymatic reaction, for example, would be pretty poor performing at low temperature. It will gain maximum efficacy at the right temperature, and then as the temperature goes up, it will go lower and lower. That's typically a non-monotonic relationship. But the relationship still exists, and really no Pearson nor Spearman correlations work really well in this context. So what did Kendall do to make this work? Well, he used still ranks, but he also compared ranks of different pairs of variables. That is to say, he didn't just look at ranking each single value in its own distribution, but he also looked at the relationship between different pairs of values across the distribution. And I'll give you a more practical example to hopefully make that more understandable. If you look at these two tables, you can see on the right, it's slightly changing. They are slightly different. So in this table, which is the first one I've shown you, the ranks are not ordered from the smallest to the biggest on the middle column. In this one, they are. Okay. So each of these values are considered a pair. What Kendall's does is it compares this pair to this pair and determines, sorry guys, whether the pairs are concordant or not. So for example, if I compare this pair and this pair, okay, rank one and rank three, and rank two and rank one. Rank one and rank three, the ranks are going up. Rank two and rank one, the ranks are going down. So this is considered a discordant pair, if that makes sense. Because again, rank one for one variable and rank three for the other variable. Look at this as a pair. For the first variable, the rank is number two. For the second variable, now rank is number one. So these two pairs are suggesting that the relationship between the two variables is not consistent. If we look at the second comparison that we run, so we have compared this pair with this pair, and we're going to compare this pair with this pair, we got rank two and rank one, and rank three and rank two. This is a concordant comparison because the ranks are both going down here and are going down here as well. I hope this makes some sort of sense. And please feel free to raise your hand or just unmute yourself if it doesn't. But if you think about it and you start looking at the way a variable behaves in a chart and how each point compares to the other one, and then you look at if that behavior is concordant or discordant, you pretty quickly realize that even in a relationship that is non-monotonic, you can still spot a relationship because the ranks will be going up and then down and then up. And as the distribution carries on from the lower to the highest value, you will be able to pick up relationships even if they are shaped in a weird way. I hope that makes some sort of sense. It certainly does to me. There are, however, circumstances where things are a little bit weird, such as when you have ranks that are tied, such as the fourth one in the table we were looking at earlier on. Kendall, at the start, didn't really have a way of dealing with this, but then he figured it out. So there actually are a number of different types of tau correlations. The one that we use most commonly is tau B, and tau B does take into account this phenomenon of tie ranks, if that makes sense. The interpretation of the actual numerical outcome of the correlation coefficient is the same. So one is positive, minus one is negative, and everything else sits in between. Technically, there are some forms of tau's correlation coefficients that cannot reach complete correlation because of the way the math is run. And finally, just a quick reminder that correlation and causation are not the same thing. Now, this is the third time I mentioned this, but this is part of a sort of fun satirical type religion that is called Pastafarianism. And one of the important things that this religion supports is that there is a relationship between the global average temperature and the number of pirates, and that this relationship is inverse. Obviously, this makes absolutely no sense, and there is no such thing as a relationship between the number of pirates and the global average temperatures. And we all know why the pirates are disappearing. So, what I'm trying to say is that correlation does not mean causation, regardless of what type of tests you run to try and establish whether there is correlation or not. So, let's close with an example. I collected data about papers that were advertised on Twitter by publishing journal as part of my dissertation. And I collected likes data, and I want to see if they're correlated with citation data. So it's the exact same example we used last time, but this time we're going to run it using Kendall. So as usual, let's open our overall data set with Jamovi. And similarly to last time, we go to regression, correlation matrix, and we said we were going to look at likes and relationship with citations. And as you can see, it's pretty easy. You just select Kendall's tau, remove Pearson. You can also do Pearson and Spearman, which we discussed last time. And if you like, you can also have a correlation matrix drawn for you over there. So again, it's extremely easy to do in Jamovi. You can then determine also whether there's any correlation, positive or negative correlation. You can also flag significant correlations with some asterisks. Right, that's as simple as that. Thank you very much.
Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening. Until next time, keep coming alive with our search for questions.